Tama Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the teen, your T-Lo, Tom Pichon. I'm here with the low and your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
And it's week 4 in quarantine for the two of us.
Yes.
So yay us. We feel like that's something of an accomplishment. We're not literally in quarantine, but we're in lockdown. Which means we basically haven't left the house in in 4 weeks. So.
And I also would like to say that we're lucky that we can stay home. A lot of people have to go out and work and you know, do whatever they need to do. And you know, it's not easy.
Absolutely. Our privilege is all over this mess. And we completely recognize that. We're lucky that we are self-employed. We're lucky that we are two people who already work from home. And we're lucky that in many ways we can just hunker down for a month and not deal with the world.
Right.
So that's us. If you've been listening to us throughout this whole thing, you know, we've been baking and cleaning and rearranging furniture and trying to do our little, you know, prison yard workouts in our living room. So I don't think we have any updates on any of that. Did we do anything interesting this week for our lockdown?
No. I mean, just,
I didn't even do much baking because we kind of hit the wall on that. We were like, all right.
Yeah, we've been eating a lot.
Well, who hasn't? One of the things, I mean, everybody jokes about that now that they're working from home or now that they're on lockdown, they just don't wear jeans or they don't wear pants. But actually, that was always a rule for me. I don't impose rules on Lorenzo. He can do whatever he wants in terms of how he dresses. But I always had a rule. I get up every day and I get dressed.
That's true. Yeah,
because,
that's true.
It's easier for me to focus on work. And it's also having a pair of jeans on all day, having on something that buttons means you're just not going to stuff your face. So it's always my measurement is I get up every day and I put on my jeans. And if they're feeling snug, it's like, all right.
I know. Right. And after you said that to me, I realized that that's very true, because then you wear sweatpants and you're like, oh, I'm fine.
Exactly. No, I'm sitting here in jeans.
These fit me fine. I don't need to stop eating.
I joke all the time about us working in drawstring pants, but it's actually not true for me. Lorenzo, like I said, he can do whatever he wants. And
look, that's very true.
Bitch has a 31-inch waist, same as the day I met him. So. All right, what else is going on with us? Nothing at all this week.
Not much. Watching TV as usual. Couple of screeners we've been watching, but we can't talk about them yet. But we will involve
very disappointing screeners.
There are some good ones that involve a lot of costuming. So we'll be talking about costumes in the future.
Yes, but not a very good series. I'm not very excited about what's on the horizon in terms of from what we had. You're looking at me like, ooh, you're being very negative.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. America is one of them.
That one I'm looking forward to. Yeah, but we don't have screeners for that one.
Not yet, but the costumes are great, and I can't wait to talk about them. There's also Hollywood on Netflix. The costumes are also great. So, yeah.
We will. I mean, I feel like a month into this, we have figured out our content, even though it sort of waxes and wanes every day in terms of how much we get out.
Right.
But we have figured it out. What's the best for us in this sort of red carpetless world? I do miss red carpet, so don't you?
I do miss red carpet because, yeah, the celebrity commentary in general by the news and, you know,
it's just
by
awful.
The
it's
shows
just awful.
And stuff. It's just so dumb. They're just dumb. So
I miss talk shows and I don't even watch them. I miss red carpets. I miss all that stuff we used to cover. And I know it's coming back. And I'm actually really proud of us for what we have accomplished this month in terms of content, in terms of coming up with ways that stay true to who we are, who we've always been.
It's not easy at all.
It's not easy. The other day, the Fug Girls paid us a compliment on Twitter, said that our quarantine content has been so good. To us, I said, that is the highest compliment because nobody knows better than the Fug Girls right now how difficult it is to navigate this world and keep doing, you know, what your readers expect of you. So I'm proud of what we've come up with. I'm proud of what we're doing. I feel like we're on the right track.
Right.
But yes, I can't wait to do another red carpet commentary.
Right. And we did question the whole thing, obviously, that what we do is not necessarily saving lives, but at the same time, we feel like this is what we do best, and that we do get a ton of, we've been getting a lot of emails people saying, thank you so much for still doing what you do. You know, it's where I go to when I want to forget about what's going on in my life right now and all that stuff. So we appreciate that and thank you.
We do. We do appreciate that. And one minor pitch before we get into the topics of the week is to, if you're still looking for something to occupy your time or to take your mind off things, Legendary Children is still on sale. You can order it from your local bookseller, or you can order the Audible book or the Kindle version of the book, but it's still out there. It's still getting great reviews. This week, we were put on a list of 6 books you need to read about revolutions, which I loved. Book Riot did that.
Yeah.
Which I loved because the week before, we were put on a list of, you know, 13 books feminists have to read this spring. And that was so built into the writing of the book was our hope that people would understand it wasn't just a book about Drag Race, it wasn't just a book about drag queens, and that there were themes in it and things that it's trying to say that had much larger and more specific appeal. So to have that sort of thing continue to happen in the wake of the worst possible situation to launch a book or any other sort of product has been really, truly gratifying. And I'm grateful to the people who have supported the book. And like I said, this is the 5-minute pitch of the week. If you haven't bought it, please consider. It's extremely well reviewed. We're very proud of it. And we feel like it could give you something to think about and feel uplifted by
right
at a time when things are kind of dark. All right.
And a shout out to all the people on Instagram for posting their pictures with a book.
Yes,
their
love
stories.
That. Can't tell you
much. I just love that. Their pictures are so beautiful. And, you know, I just saw one by the pool and reading the book. So thank you so much, you guys. We're trying to be more active on Instagram. And we've been reading all your comments and looking at all your pictures and stuff on Instagram. So thank you very much.
Yes, and we're also trying to get caught up on literally several months worth of reader emails that required response. So if you haven't heard from us, we're working on it. We're working on it, I promise. And we thank you for, again, your support and your reaching out.
Right.
All right. So it's a little bit of a style-based pop style opinion fest. We're going to, of course, look at Making the Cut, the latest 2 episodes. You know, I brought it up on Twitter the other day. I said, is anyone watching this? And it got a ton of responses. And they're all angry and critical. And I don't see anybody else talking about the show, but we'll get to that. That's after we get past the happier bit, which is, or maybe the more melancholy bit, which is, this was the week we all said goodbye to Schitt's Creek. And I know that people are feeling very weepy about it. I did sit and watch the finale a second time yesterday. And yeah, there were tears streaming down my face the whole time.
Right.
I was like, all right, I cynical as I want to be about this show, or about any show, it just works. And it worked all the way up until the end. They knew how to push my buttons. They knew how to push everyone's buttons.
Especially now with everything that's going on right now, you know, watching anything hopeful and sweet is, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah, but we wanted to, we did a review. This, you know, basically the overview of the whole series that was on our site this week. But I wanted to talk today about the costumes.
Yes.
Because we are known for talking about costumes, and that show was known for its costumes. I don't think we need to get into deep analysis. And in fact, I don't think the approach to costume design calls for that sort of deep analysis because it's comedy costume design. It's character-based and it's comedy-based. And what was great about the costume design on Schitt's Creek is how iconic each one of the characters became. If I say David Rose, there's a specific look. If I say Alexis Rose, if I say Jocelyn Schitt, there's a specific look.
Yes.
And even Johnny Rose, like he never actually changed up his look. It was always the same very well-cut suit with a pocket square and usually no tie. They were so well-defined with their clothing. Alexis was so clearly the former rich party girl, former like Kardashian level of style to her. And here's a prime example of why the show, what is the costume designer's name? I did look it up.
Deborah Henson.
Why the show, it's quietly brilliant in a lot of ways. Think of the A Little Bit Alexis scene.
Yes.
you can remember what she wore in that scene. It was a velvet baby doll dress with thigh-high boots and a big pendant. And the reason you can remember that is, first off, it's one of those iconically simple outfits that's made up of three distinct pieces. Second, it completely worked in service to the scene. The dress moved, the pendant moved in a certain way because she was dancing all over that room. Because she was wearing thigh-high boots when she got down on the floor and started kicking her legs up. Like, it all worked in service to the comedy. She was funnier looking because she was in this big velvet baby doll dress. Right, right, right. That's just a minor example. When you talk about costume design on Schitt's Creek, of course everyone's going to talk about Moira.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when you think about Schitt's Creek, I mean, Moira is the first character you think of when we talk about costumes in general. And I read a ton of interviews with Catherine O'Hara, and she always said that she had so much fun with the character. She got to pick her clothes also, or help,
devise the look.
Yes, and kind of like decide with, together with the costume designer, what was the best way to go for Moira. And then she thought, she was very much inspired, and there are interviews out there where she saying that when they had their first meeting about costumes, she came with a bunch of pictures of
Daphne Guinness,
which is, you know, she's a socialite and an heiress, and she's, you
and
know,
a this, fashionista.
And a fashionista and a fashion icon, and she kind of dresses like Moira.
She does.
So it was the perfect inspiration, and they did a good job because... And the wigs, my God, the wigs alone. I mean, the wigs are just, you know, the wigs are like a character. And it was fun to see all that put together to create a character. And I read an interview with Catherine, which I thought was very interesting, because she was saying that she didn't want to create a character that was just silly, in the sense that the character was aware that he or she was being silly. She wanted to create a character that would kind of believed in herself in the way she dresses, the way she talks and everything. That wasn't kind of just a mockery of the whole thing, but it was just, you know, this is how she thinks she...
No, I totally agree.
This is the world she lives in.
I think that comes across. I don't think... Moira's outfits were outrageous. And there were even times where she looked ridiculous. But I'll be honest, there were times where I thought she looked pretty fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
When we say costumes, a lot of these pieces were high-end fashion pieces. She was wearing major designers like McQueen. Dan Levy wore Tom Brown in the wedding
scene.
Yes. They were quite comfortable using high-end designers to costume the characters because, of course, they would have a lot of high-end pieces. I look at Moira in a somewhat similar way even though the characters aren't the same, to Idina Menzel in Absolutely Fabulous, where...
Oh, my God, yes.
The costume design used high fashion to say something about the character without simply making fun of her. We make jokes about how Idina looked and everything like that, but in all honesty, if you go back and look at a lot of old AbFab episodes, whether Jennifer Saunders and her costume designer were brilliant or whether they just stumbled into it, they actually did predict a lot of trends for the next 20 years.
Right.
And there are certain outfits Idina wears on... AbFab that were clearly played for laughs, and then you look at them 25 years later and you're like, well, actually this looks pretty fabulous to me. So there's that underlining feeling with Moira's looks where, yes, they are ridiculous and they are over the top and they are high-end fashion pieces in a lot of Idina Menzel's pieces were actual, right, like Le Croix. But they're also... There's something really stylish about them. There is something being... It's not just that they're making fun of her or that they're illustrating what kind of person she is. At the end of the day, some of these looks were really gorgeous.
They were. And what this is like when you do a fantastic job as a costume designer. It's because you get all these amazing designers' clothes, you know, and then... Because, you know, the characters had a ton of money. So, of course, the characters had money to buy all those clothes. And they continued to wear them, even though they had no money anymore, which makes total sense to me because, you know, you still keep your clothes if you don't have any money, but you still have your wardrobe. So it was just perfect for that. And that, you know... In an environment that people would never wear that. I mean, there's that very, very funny episode that David wants to sell his clothes. You know, he goes to he goes to a store and he wants to sell everything. And you know, he acts like you're going to a vintage store in New York. Where's the manager?
Right.
And all that stuff.
I have said that David Rose's entire wardrobe, if I was maybe a decade or two younger, I would absolutely
wear
most of it in a second.
Yeah.
Most of it, I would absolutely wear. There were a few pieces of his over the years that were just a little bit too ridiculous for me, but I actually do love the way that character is dressed. Again, it's played for laughs a lot of the time, but I think David Rose will go down as an iconic male fashion figure mm-hmm. over the years. People will really, especially since I, again, sort of like in this Adina Monsoon sort of way, I bet you 10 years from now, you're going to see way more young guys dressed like that than, say, dress like, I don't know, Patrick on
Schitt's Creek. And the thing is that if you go to Fashion Week or if you hang around with, you know, people with money and obsessed with fashion, that's how they dress. Very expensive clothes, you know,
right.
All the Alexander McQueens and, you know, Balenciaga that you can imagine. I love that I remember reading an interview a long time ago with him saying that he got all his clothes online. They would shop on eBay or RioRio, which is another site where you go and get vintage designer clothes. And because they were on a budget as usual, and they were just buying all these clothes.
Right.
I read an interview with the costume designer. Something else that I didn't know is that for Rosalind's character. Jocelyn's character. She wears a lot of t-shirts or hoodies or something that they have a graphic element that has like a picture
usually
or something.
Kittens or flowers.
Yes, kittens and flowers. And they said that because they use vintage, I didn't know this, but when you wear that type of costume on TV, you have to have permission to wear those.
Right.
You have to go after...
Those are copyrighted graphics.
Right. I didn't know that. So because all those pieces were vintage, they couldn't get a hold of all those people to get permission to wear those clothes. So they decided to create their own.
Oh, really?
So they went and printed all those t-shirts and hoodies and stuff for her, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Jocelyn is one of my favorite characters.
She is
so funny.
The one just final observation about, well, first off, we haven't even mentioned Moira's final outfit, which was
insane. Yeah.
Again, the hat and the hair were designed to be ridiculous, but the actual ensemble was some high fashion shit, man. She looked pretty fabulous from the neck down.
I couldn't believe it.
With the gold gloves and the gold boots. It was pretty fabulous.
That was an Alexander McQueen dress, and the boots were Tom Ford. And they, you know, there are a ton of articles out there about how they picked those. She decided to go with a Pope look. She wanted a Pope look. And of course they said, yes, of course, why not? And the hair, deciding on have the halo crown, like hair made out of hair.
I'm so pleased to find out, because I don't think they were as open about this until the end of the series, how much of Moira is Catherine O'Hara's creation.
It's not
that someone wrote the lines for her. It's that she actually did have a heavy hand in the way she talks, what she says, because they said that she actually came up with some of Moira's lines.
Right, because she would look up all these words.
She designed some of her wigs and stuff like that. Like, I was really pleased. I'm not surprised, because I've known for 30 years that Catherine O'Hara is a comic genius. But I'm really pleased to see her getting her due. And man, if she doesn't get an Emmy out of this, I think that's insane.
I know, she keeps getting nominated.
The scene where she's marrying the two of them, I could not stop laughing and crying at the same time.
Yes.
I was laughing so hard, and there were tears rolling down my face at the same time. And it was all because of her perfectly calibrated performance that grabbed your heart, but also was hilariously funny. And also what I loved about that is the constant asides to Dan Levy as he was reacting to her, because of all the relationships on the show, that one, I think, was the most rewarding. Dan Levy and Catherine O'Hara had insane chemistry together. And even though they don't look anything alike, you could absolutely believe this was a mother and a son.
Right. Well, they were so great.
Yeah.
Performance were amazing. Everything about the show. I thought the show was so wonderful.
One final observation about, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
About Dan Levy, about David Rose's costumes that I love. And part of the reason I responded so well to them. I also responded heavily. We talked about this before on the podcast to David Rose as a character, even though I don't think we have a lot in common. But I did say and still believe that he, Dan Levy, created a portrait of a queer man unlike any that I had quite seen before. And it's the closest I've ever felt to seeing myself up on screen, even though I don't think I'm like David.
Right.
And a lot of queer men have said that. And I think what Dan Levy tapped into there is no universal queer male experience, but a lot of us have felt this feeling of these walls that you put up constantly because you've been hurt so badly by people around you. And then watching David just tear those walls, you know, break those walls down over the course of the series. That is something that a lot of queer men, I think, can relate to. That insecurity that that he is clearly wracked with that comes up all the time. That's the sort of thing that so many of us responded to. And going back to his costume design, one of the reasons I love about it, do you ever notice the way, picture the way David always hugs Patrick, and it's always this gigantic bear hug where he comes over him and envelops him. Dan Levy played David Rose as literally a larger figure than Dan Levy actually is. There were jokes made, constant jokes made about David's eating and how he overeats and everything like that. And by no stretch of the imagination is Dan Levy got one extra pound on him. And I don't even think he's all that large. You know, most actors aren't really that tall. But the costume designs made him look not fat, not at all, but they made him look like this larger than life figure, especially when he was next to Noah Reed, who plays Patrick, who is kind of slightly built. So there was this.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Dan Levy is that much bigger than Noah Reed. I think he was put in these large, looming black costumes that allowed them to be. And I think that is something that I related to because it's almost mimicking you and I in terms of our silhouettes.
I knew you were going
to
go there.
I know what it is to be the large gay man next to the trim gay man and be that couple. And so that's why I responded to. It's not that David Rose was playing a chubby gay, because he wasn't, but they did use the costumes to play into this idea that David is big, that David takes up a lot of space and everything like that. And it made a nice visual between him and Noah Reed, because Noah Reed wears these very tight costumes, if you've noticed. They are tailored to within an inch of his, you know, skin, half an inch. And it makes him look trim and small. So it's a nice visual. Right. I thought they, as a couple, presented. I mean, look, Modern Family just ended this week, and there's a somewhat iconic television gay couple where one of them's really large and the other one's not. But I felt like, I don't know, I felt like Noah and Dan Levy's version of it was more relatable to me than the guys on Modern Family, even though they are way closer to us and our lifestyle. Anyway, that's just, I don't know, do we have anything else to say about that show? It was...
No,
I'm glad it ended when it did, to be perfectly honest.
I mentioned that on Twitter. I said... I'm going to miss the show a lot, like I miss, you know, Mad Men. But like Mad Men, I love when a show ends when it's supposed to end.
Right.
Because you don't want to, the show is doing really well, so let's just keep going and going. And then
you can't hold on to the conceit sparkle. Why is this family still living in a hotel or a motel?
Yeah.
It just, the basic conceit of the show had already been really strained. And it was time, either you... continue with these characters and watch them as they're, you know, what, they move out of the motel and we just continue their story. What would be the point? The point was them in that motel. And that story was told and reached an end that I thought was lovely for everyone involved.
No, it's great. Yeah. And I can't wait to go back and watch everything again from the beginning.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're watching, right?
Well, I'm in a really... I just realized I'm in kind of a lucky position. I've watched the show from beginning to end, except I realized that, first off, in the first and second season, I probably skipped about 5 episodes because those aren't great seasons. And then I realized last night that I had missed like 6 episodes of this season and 4 from last. I've seen all the broad strokes, but I had skipped little in-between episodes.
Right.
So I had like... probably 15 episodes of the series that I haven't seen before that I'm just sort of working my way through.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that is nice. Nice little surprise. Anyway.
I think that's it.
Making the cut.
Making the cut. Oh, my God.
This silly, ridiculous show.
It's funny because I was watching the 2 episodes, you know, that they just... launch, and it's funny because I was watching them and the music and the editing. I mean, you can tell, my God, these people have money. They have so much money to spend, but it looks
that's
so,
all that there is to it.
But
though.
It's so funny with the music and everything. I feel like I'm watching an episode of The Hills, you know, the reality show. Right. It's like music and then a scene with them. It's just
how about the one where That was just in the second episode this week where Esther just strips down to a bikini and goes swimming because she's creatively stymied. I'm like, what is going on? And she's swimming with 10 pounds of gold jewelry on, like all these bracelets and everything all up her arm. Who gets into a chlorine-filled pool with gold on?
She's rebaptizing herself.
The whole thing. I was like, what am I watching here? And then you get to the runway. And I realize that the runway shows are jaw-dropping. And part of the reason we did sing the early praises of this show was like, wow, those they really spent money on the runway shows. But it's starting to feel really empty now because the rest of the show was kind of cheaply done and it's not interesting. There's nothing fresh about the approach. It feels very Project Runway circa 2010. And then it ends with this ridiculously over-the-top runway show.
Right.
Sometimes the work doesn't call for the level of which. When they did the second runway, the second episode, which we're going to get through both of them, with digital displays and everything.
The backdrop,
like,
yeah.
It felt like a corporate, I was at some sort of corporate presentation for Amazon. That's what it felt like.
I didn't mind that because we've seen that at Fashion Week. But it's overdone. It's way out there. And, you know, of course, they're promoting everything. The digital backdrops, it was because of Amazon Video, I believe. So anyway, that type of stuff. If you combine that with real fashion, then I don't have a problem with it. It's just that the whole thing feels, and I thought it was very interesting that during the second episode, you know, the designers are beginning to get annoyed with the whole wearable thing. You can tell that they're getting annoyed that they can't be that creative and because they have to produce something that Amazon has to sell. I went on Amazon and I saw the looks. They actually did a good job with the looks. They do look like whatever they created. But again, that's every time you have to think about it. Well, I can't go too far because, you know, oh, this is great, but, you know, they're not going to pick me because they can't produce this. And that just annoys me so much. It really does.
Yeah.
And I was happy in a way to see that the designers were getting annoyed with that too.
Aside from that, I do want to run through the runway looks. The other thing that I just was like, and I never liked it, was the judging panel. It got even stupider.
Yes, yeah.
How about Naomi crying?
I can't with those.
I was like, what is this frick? First off, I don't believe that Naomi cries over fashion ever. And secondly, it was just I was embarrassed watching it. Like in 16 years of Project Runway, I don't think the judges ever truly cried in front because they were sending someone home.
Listen, I understand.
I just want to say that it's a shame because Naomi is a fucking fantastic judge. Like, her comments are really actually quite good. And she's very, very good at playing to the camera, like playing a certain kind of role, like this total fashion bitch. And she's very hard on people, but she wants them to do well. Like, she's a perfect character, but they are not. You can't share a stage with Heidi Klum. She's not going to give Naomi enough room to be Naomi. So every time Naomi gets a little moment where it's like, yes, that's what I'm here for, then it cuts back to konnichiwa, and I'm like, I can't with that one. Anyway, go ahead.
It's just, Heidi, my God, there's nothing there. I mean,
I don't think Heidi's dumb.
She's not dumb at all.
Oh my God, no. I think if we were in a room with Heidi, we would be intimidated by how sharp she is.
But she wants to be very light and funny, but it just doesn't work. She sounds.
Both her and Tim
shallow
sound
and dumb in a way.
She and Tim are like not. They just took all the worst parts of their Project Runway personas and like her mean girl part and his, you know, grandpa hugs, and they just ramped them up, and that's all they are anymore.
Right.
Heidi likes to stir up shit, and Tim gives hugs, and that's fashion to them. That's what you think? All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I think because she has so much experience with whatever she's doing, and whatever she's doing, like she has the models show in Germany, and she also has the show
America's
here.
Got Talent.
Yeah, right. So it's a little bit of that, you know, quick jokes and you know, being funny every now and then, but it doesn't really come across as funny. And for a show like this, you have to be a little more specific when you give your criticisms. I don't know, when you express how you feel about the clothes and stuff, and it's just not there. I do appreciate that the show is going to, you know, cities like Tokyo, you know, going to amazing places to be inspired by and create amazing things. I mean, Tokyo, it's phenomenal, especially for the challenge they had, which was streetwear. It doesn't get more streetwear than Tokyo. So that is interesting. So I do like all that, and I try to just focus on that. So for the first episode, they had to create two streetwear looks. And it was nice because they're going to, whoever won is going to collaborate with Puma, which is nice. You know, these are great prizes and great opportunities. So I'm streetwear.
Let's get to that. But real quick, Chiara Ferragni sucked.
Oh my god, she was terrible. I can't stand her. Don't.
She was absolutely terrible. She has no personality, and she was so completely uncomfortable on camera.
I just don't like her at all, and it goes back to when blogging was a thing, and I just Anyway. Moving on.
All right, so we're just queuing up the. Okay, so we're doing Jiwon's look coming down the escalator. Her runway look is a pair of pants with detachable, right. You know, turns into shorts. I think the sleeves detach. It's very active wear. I actually like it. I actually like it a lot. She is very limited, though. She keeps sending the same sort of thing down the runway.
Yeah. At first, I was like, all right, great. You know, I do like her aesthetic and so on. But she keeps sending the same stuff over and over again.
And the second one was like an oversized tracksuit with like a Korean print on it. And I have to say, it looks very derivative. I feel like I've seen
this. I believe it's her name in Korean.
No, that's the next week's look. Oh, okay. I don't think that's her. Maybe it is. I don't know.
I think it is. But I actually like the second look.
I think I've seen the second look, though. I don't feel like I...
True.
It just feels very retail to me, which I guess is
but
the point.
I do, well, yeah. Well, they're asking for wearable and sellable. But I do like that. The second piece I do like.
And here comes Esther with black. And those headpieces are actually really cool, though.
They are. But again, that's the part when it gets on my nerves, is the judge is trying really hard to say something nice about the looks when they know, you know, right. It's all black. It's the same stuff.
It's very dull.
Right. But it's Esther. Both so looks very let's dull. Just say something.
I mean, when you look at like the seaming on the look and everything, like she does a lot of work and it but the fact of the matter is it's all rendered in black, so you can't see it.
Right.
This is part of the problem with her. I don't have anything against black in fashion. It's really common, but she's showing herself to be someone who can't use anything but black.
Right.
Next up is a Sander who just went completely off, like in his own little world. That's fine. I can't even describe the first piece, the runway piece.
It's like a shredded like tweed skirt and a
Swiss
and
dot.
Which I love both pieces, but I agree they're not streetwear.
It's very experimental. It's very Belgian design, and
they're beautiful.
They are, but I was annoyed with them this week because I was like, "What the hell, dude? This is clearly not what they're looking for." And if you're really up for $1 million, why would you screw around with this?
Yeah, but they're great. They're beautiful pieces.
They are beautiful pieces. Johnny's, I love Johnny's work, even though I would never wear it. It's not my style at all. And in fact, I think it's a very cliched sort of LA menswear style. But he really, every time I'm like, well, he really found a way to do it.
Yeah, he does a very good job styling them too. So they look very strong.
Every piece looks strong. So first look is a sheer sleeved jacket. I just want to describe it with like that honeycomb digital print that he created over a pair of full like pegged pants. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do like the print. When he showed the print, I was like, "Ooh, I'm not crazy about it." But I do like that he layered it
with a sheer piece
on top of it. Loved it. The first piece, absolutely loved it. The second piece is a little too
It's
basic.
A cliche, but it's gorgeous. It's so right. well done. I would never wear. It's like a leather, very inspired by Asian design. There's like a crisscross sleeveless top, and then these baggy cropped pants and. It's gorgeous, actually.
It is really
nice. The proportions
on
it are beautiful. Totally not my style in any way. But what he does really, really well.
I agree. Totally agree.
Next up is Megan with an asymmetrical print skirt and an asymmetrical off-the-shoulder blouse. And I'm just like, wow, this is so dress barn.
Yeah. Megan is very mall clothes, I think.
Very mall clothes, yeah.
And
I mean, it is an Amazon fashion show.
True. But they look very like I've seen this a million times type of look.
Yeah.
And they're just, yeah. They look very basic to me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think she's ever done anything that I really object to, but she Yeah, these are okay. She's got an oversized hoodie with a red drawstring and a pair of cropped pants. And okay, that's cute. Next up is Sabato, who completely...
Sabato, he's not streetwear. So, of course, he wasn't going to do anything streetwear. And, you know, you saw it.
He sent two gowns out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not his style. It's not his thing. And it's okay in the real world. But if you're in a competition, then, you know, you're going to be sent home. Yeah.
He might have gotten by if these pieces were interesting in some way, but they really weren't. They looked drab and a little depressing.
I agree. Totally agree.
If there was some joy in it, some fun in it, or some looseness in it, I think it would have. He might have skated by, but it was so... It looked like he gave up. That's exactly what it looked like.
I agree. I totally agree.
Next up is Renat, and I actually really loved both of her pieces this week.
Her pieces were great.
She did a patchwork top.
The patchwork was beautiful. Yeah. Everything about it looked very, very
streetwear. It looked very fresh.
Yeah, I agree.
Very, very fresh. Her use of color, she used these blues and greens. Really, really well done. The second piece, which was the one that they loved, the one that they gave the win to, I didn't love as much. It's like this big, puffy, oversized jacket with a reverse collar in a blue plaid.
I like the piece, but I think it's a little too wide. There's no, like...
I thought the other
waist
ensemble was more accessible, right. But this is the, quote, accessible look.
But if you go online and look at the final product that they're selling on Amazon, it does have a little bit of a waist.
Yeah.
So it does look better. The piece that they produce actually looks better.
Yeah. That's it. For the runway, they sent Sabato home, right?
Renat won.
Then they sent Sabato home. And sure, okay. I can't argue with Sabato. I actually can't argue with either one of those choices. Renat's was the best, and I did like Sabato's.
Right.
I mean, I did understand why they wanted to send. I'm trying to talk and queue up the next video
Yeah, I know what you mean. He couldn't do streetwear, and then, you know, it's a competition, so you go home.
Very sweet guy, yes. But yeah, it wasn't going to happen. So next one, they had to do the opposing forces with the digital display. Oh, and they had the little digital influencer sitting in the front row. I can't even with that.
Nuri. Oh, my God.
Here's the thing. I'm not going to sound like an oldie McOlderson here. I understand that these social media characters, they carry a lot of cultural weight for a lot of young people. But anytime you try and put them in a television show, it's like, well, that's, they look so stupid. That's not what they're creatures of social media.
They're created for Instagram.
Yeah,
they're created
for something else. Once you insert them into conventional media, everybody involved looks just stupid. It doesn't work at all.
Right, right.
I'm so glad they didn't have her sitting during the judging session. Like,
oh my God.
I bet you Naomi Campbell was like, fuck you, I'm not doing that. I'm not sitting next to a cartoon.
But yeah, it's a little bit too much. But they, you know, it's all about millions of followers now, so I get it.
Then this is kind of why this episode was the one where I sort of hit the wall, where I was like, everything is so gimmicky, but the fashion itself takes a back seat. It's drama and gimmicks and all this Amazon money being spent. And then the fashion is like slightly better than your average Project Runway. Right. I'm just like, well, what's the point to all
this? The thing is that I do like the backdrops, the background. They're gorgeous.
You couldn't see the clothes.
But it doesn't work for this here. Yeah. It doesn't work for for this type of show. Because first of all, you had to wait until the model came all the way down so you could see the clothes.
And even then you couldn't see them that
right.
well.
Right. So it just doesn't work. I mean, somebody should have said it. You know what? We're going to have to do this a little
bit. But Amazon wants to spend that money. Yes, and they want to show you that they can spend that money. Okay. So first up is Johnny again.
Doing an amazing job.
Just doing these pieces that I would never, ever wear. But I'm like, holy cow, that's gorgeous. It was the first look is like this samurai-inspired houndstooth, which sounds insane. But he totally made it work. Beautiful, beautiful menswear he does.
The leather details. It really worked. And I'm not a houndstooth person at all.
No.
I actually don't like it.
And I'm not somebody who could get away with wearing, say, Asian-inspired silhouettes like he uses. But it just looked amazing. Next up is a houndstooth and plaid and leather coat that he made, which is very, very striking. But I did feel was a little over-designed.
Yeah, a little bit. But as I think Naomi said, that when you combine both, they do look great.
And they do.
It's a strong mini collection.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Okay, next up is Jiwon, and we have to wait 20 minutes for her model to walk the steps so we can actually see what they're wearing. Girlfriend kind of lost it.
It's a great inspiration, but it just didn't work. It didn't work. The second look, the dress, it was not
well. The first
look
is this giant. She keeps saying it's Hanbok inspired, but I don't feel like the silhouette ever looks like a Hanbok. It's just big.
Yeah. You could say it's inspired by it, but it doesn't really look like it.
It doesn't really. I wouldn't be an expert, of course. And then she wrote her name all over it in raised puffy letters, Korean characters. And I just felt it made it look very childish and costumey. I didn't like that effect at all.
Right. It's a great idea, but it just didn't look well.
It didn't look like fashion to me.
No, not at all. And the second look is really, really bad.
It looks like a hospital gown. She looks like she's getting an MRI.
Right. The silhouette, it's bad. The asymmetrical hemline just didn't work.
Yeah.
The pleats, it was a bit of like too many elements, and it just didn't look flattering at all. I didn't think so.
Next up is Renat, who I feel like she kind of lost it this week after winning the previous episode. I don't know even how to describe what she's wearing. Everything's all askew. It's a pair of shorts with like a slouchy jacket.
It's
kind of ugly.
The fabrics didn't work at all. All the fabrics together, they just didn't work together. They just didn't work.
And the shapes are weird.
The shapes are weird, and everything looks a little too shiny or tacky, and it just didn't work.
I also don't feel like the pieces speak to each other at all. The second piece is a business suit for some reason, and in this really shiny, ugly blue. I don't know. I don't know what she was thinking. Nothing seemed to coordinate or make any sense.
No, and like I said, the combination of fabrics, the designs are not great. It's it's a pair of shorts with the top. It looked very, very basic.
Yeah. Next up was Megan, who, the first look was, it's a very basic, what looks like a white jumpsuit. Those are pants.
Right.
And then she just put this big silver tinfoil thing on it.
It's tinfoil couture. It's.
And the judges were astute when they said it looks like couture from far away, but as soon as she walked down the steps and got closer, it was like, no, that looks silly on her.
And it's a very basic, like 101 type of design.
I will say the suit is lovely.
The suit looks great with the belt. It's a white suit, right? It's
yeah,
a white suit.
And it's
with
got like
belt.
This weird, not weird, this kind of interesting shoulder detail. Oversized lapels and a silver belt. And I know it's sharp. It's again, like a lot of her clothes, it feels very off the rack, but at least this feels good off the rack.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's like a nice store at a mall. If you go to the fancier ones,
I will say, I don't
find
think Megan picks very expensive looking fabrics. I think that may be part of her downfall, is that's a great looking suit rendered in what looks like a sort of mid-range fabric.
Right, right.
Next up is Sander, who I will admit was really starting to get on my nerves, but,
well, he was annoyed that he had to create something wearable the last, episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, they liked what he designed, but it wasn't wearable, blah, blah, blah. So that was, he was annoyed with that and decided
to
create
something.
And
he went into this where he was almost sort of like doing a fuck you to the judges,
right,
where he's like, fine, I'll do the most basic crap imaginable. But somewhere along the way, I don't know if this was editing or whatever, but I think he seemed to realize that actually I can produce my
work
within these constraints. I liked both pieces. I loathe the fabrics and the color story.
I don't like
yellow
the colors.
And brown.
Yeah.
Who wears that? Who
I don't
wears
like
that?
The colors at all. I do like the first look. The top looks interesting.
With the t-shirt design.
With the t-shirt kind of incorporated into the whole look. And the second look, it's okay. The second look has some interesting elements, but it's the color combo, yeah.
They're good designs. They showed a lot of growth on his part because they really do feel like that sort of askew thing that he wants to do, while at the same time looking like actual clothes that people might buy. But I feel like, again, maybe sort of like Megan, his textile choices are not always serving him all
right
that well.
I just look at the back of the second look. It's actually interesting. It has a nice shoulder treatment. It's actually good.
So, and then there's Esther, and then she produced another black dress, but it's got like a sheer, is it even, yeah, like a, it looks like it's plastic, actually.
It's PVC, I believe.
Yeah. And then she did a second dress, which was all gold PVC.
Right. I had no idea where she was going with that, and it's clearly not her.
Right. It didn't feel like her at all.
It's like, all right, I'm only doing black. This is me. Or I'm just going to go completely crazy here and design something that has nothing to do with me, which is fine. I didn't like the judges going too hard on the PVC and all that, because this is something that Prada would send down the runway.
I mean, Naomi's right, where she said, you know, young kids are,
you'd see that on the runway now. So I'm glad Naomi said something, because it's not, you know, something completely crazy. I thought it was interesting.
Right.
Obviously, you just look at it and you go like, this is never going to be produced by Amazon, so forget it. I didn't think it was horrible. Given the time these people have to produce these clothes, it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
So Sander won.
Sander won, and they sent Jiwon home, correct?
No, they sent Renat home.
Oh, they sent Renat home.
Yes.
They gave Jiwon another chance?
Yes, I believe so.
It's all
so.
Such a blur. I actually did watch it.
Yeah, I know. It's all confusing. But I'm glad Sander won. It was the most interesting of all of them.
I agree.
Mini collection. And I went online and I looked at it. The way they produced it, the top looks really bad. It doesn't look like anything. It doesn't look like what he designed.
No,
but
of course
again,
not.
That's how it works. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But that's it. I'll keep watching. The locations are gorgeous. They have money to spend. You know, I always skip the part with Heidi and Tim going somewhere or doing something stupid.
I will admit, when they announced this show and Heidi and Tim really talked about it with such excitement and they talked about the Amazon money that was put behind it and everything, I really was like, I guess Project Runway is going to be over, but there is a part of me that's secretly a little happy that this version kind of sucks. Like, I feel like Project Runway is still the better show, even without Heidi and Tim in it, and that Heidi and Tim themselves were not the reason Project Runway was a success. Otherwise, this show would be working better than it does.
Now, imagine Project Runway with that much money.
Right. It's a shame. Although, to be honest, I think $1 million prize is excessive.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're getting into lottery money at that point, and it feels less and less like fashion. It feels
for a designer
now. Like, it feels like a game show. But whatever, we'll see what happens with the winner when what they can do with that kind of money.
Right.
But it's fine. It's fine for us. We're the type of people who would sit and watch a show like this.
Right.
But other
right.
than that, I don't think it has much. I don't know. No one else seems to be talking about it.
It's fashion. I'll watch it, but it's not my favorite.
Not at all. Anyway, that seems to be it for this week. I don't even have any like recipes to share with you or anything.
We're trying to, because we went a little crazy. Which is like you were baking like almost every day, and I was eating every
day. I am
going
to do a Jewish apple cake this weekend.
I love it.
I didn't realize until relatively recently that that's actually a Pennsylvania thing, that Jewish apple cakes are not sold all over the country. But anyway,
interesting.
Google it. Number one result will probably be the one that I'm making. Okay, so that's it for this week. Kittens, love you very much for all your support.
Yes, we do appreciate it.
Can't tell you how much we appreciate it. All your kind words and that sort of thing. And we will continue to do our best to keep you distracted for as long as we possibly can. And we'll be back here next week with more opinions on everything that crosses our eyes or crosses our desks. So thank you.
Thank
love you.
You.
Mean it.
Bye-bye. Bye.